Listening. Welcome again. This is the Bruce and Bird Show, Sunday, March 28th, 2010. It's about 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Savings Time. This is KOWA, K-O-W-A, 106.5 FM, broadcasting from Olympia, Washington.
It was 8:49 on a beautiful ninth day of July. There was not a cloud to speak of, so the orange sun hung lonely in the sky. I lay prone in my cabbie home, thinking of fine nappy Jackie and his jazz cat's horn, sliding in a tape of Bird on Bird when suddenly rang my phone. Hey, butterfly, the voice said, slip on some duds, comb out your fro, and slide on down to my pad. The vibe here is very pleasant, and I truly request your presence. A problem of great magnitude has arose, and as we speak it grows. Damn, what could it be, I thought, a juice I bought, and rolled on down to her spot. Seeing bros I know, slapping fives, I arrived and pressed G5. And there was Nikki, looking some kind of sad, with tears falling from her eyes. She sat me down, and dug my frown, and began to run it down. You remember my boyfriend Sid, that fly kid who I love? Well, our love was often a verb. Spontaneity has brought a third. But due to our youth and economic state, we wish to terminate. About this we don't feel great, but baby, that's how it is. But the feds have dissed me, they ignored and dismissed me. The pro-lifers harassed me outside the clinic and called me a murderer. Now that's hate. So needless to say, we're in a mental state of debate. Hey, beautiful bird, I said, digging her somber mood. The fascists are some heavy dudes. They don't really give a damn about life. They just don't want a woman to control her body or have the right to choose. But baby, that ain't nothing. They just want a male finger on the button. Because if you say war, they will send them to die by the score. Aborting mission should be your volition. But if Suda and Thomas have their way, you'll be standing in line unable to get welfare while they'll be out hunting and fishing. It has always been around. Have a niche, but they'll make it a privilege, not a right, accessible only to the rich. Hey, pro-lifers need to dig themselves, because life don't stop after birth, and for a child born to the unprepared, it might even just get worse. The situation would surely change if they were to find themselves in it. Supporters of the H-bomb and firebombing clinics. What type of shit is that? Orwellian, in fact. If Roe v. Wade was overturned, would not the desire remain intact, leaving young girls to risk their health, doctors to botch and watch as they kill themselves? Now, I hate to sound macabre, but hey, isn't it my job to lay it on the masses and get them off their asses to fight against these fascists? So, whatever you decide, make that move with pride. Sid will be there and so will I. An insect till I die. Rhythms and sounds spinning around. Confrontations across the nation. Your block, my block, dreadlocks. What a shock. Land of the free, but not me. Not me. Not me.
Hello. Welcome back. This is the Bruce and Bird Show. And I am Bird. And you were just listening to the Diggable Planets song title La Femme Fatale off the 1993 album Reachin', A New Refutation of Time and Space. Welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here. And actually, I'm waiting for Bruce to get here. He said he's on the way, so I decided to start the show without him, and I think that's okay. So I am looking forward to Bruce getting here, though. Some of the topics that I want to cover today are including the anniversary, the commemoration of the Mitchell Corey, which happened about 10, 12 days ago now. There was an event here in Olympia, and I want to talk about that a little bit and talk about what's going on with Rachel Corey and Rachel's parents. Craig and Cindy are in Israel right now, pursuing a civil case in order to deal with what happened there in 2003 when Rachel was killed. Other topics that I want to talk about include a presentation that occurred here in Olympia on last Thursday on the 25th, a presentation by Dana Vasali about recent travel to Afghanistan. I want to talk about some of what's going on with the healthcare bill. And I also want to talk about Travis Bishop, a conscientious war resister who was recently released from the brig at Fort Lewis, and some of what's going on with that. I was just in up in Tillicum, in Lakewood, right across the freeway from Fort Lewis, at Coffee Strong, where there was a celebration this afternoon to celebrate the release of Travis Bishop from the brig, where he was held for 7 months based on his refusal to deploy to Afghanistan, a war which he believes is illegal and immoral based on his spiritual and religious beliefs. And so I want to talk about that. And I'm hoping that when Bruce gets here, he will also want to talk about the LASSO conference, which is scheduled for the weekend of, I believe it's April 9th through the 11th. I might be wrong about those dates, but coming up here in a couple weeks at Evergreen, there's going to be a regional LASSO conference, Latin American Solidarity Organization. And so that should be great. Here's Bruce right now. Hi, Bruce.
Hey. Sorry I'm late.
Hey. I just muted my mic. I'm somewhat technically challenged here. So I was just telling everyone about some of the topics I want to cover. Rachel Corey.
Yeah, I heard. I was listening.
Dana Vasali, LASSO, Travis Bishop. And I played some Diggable Planets for everyone. And
yeah, I heard that.
Yay. I'm glad you're here.
Uh-huh. Showed up, man.
I'm happy.
Nick of time.
Yeah.
Well, 10 minutes late. Anyway.
Yeah.
So let's talk Rachel Corey for a second.
Okay. Yeah. Did you happen to go to the event last?
Yes.
I think it was Tuesday. It was Tuesday the 20th. Tuesday the 16th, it was the actual day, anniversary specific. Did you go to that?
Yeah, the ballroom at the ballroom.
Yep.
Yeah, that was really powerful.
There's an article in the April issue of Works in Progress, and I think it's basically the text of a talk given by Tom Wright, who was there. And I think the subject of that is about the investigation that the Coreys are pursuing about Rachel's death. So,
yeah, I think that his discussion of the details of the death were pretty interesting. I've heard. I don't want to give any credit to their credence to other people who've talked negatively of Rachel Corey. I think there's active people who are trying to smear the legacy of Rachel Corey.
Some slander.
Yeah. And I think that that's not that needs to be fought.
Yeah, you know? That really, in my opinion, doesn't help anybody's cause, whether you support Israel or whether you support Palestine or whether you support both Israel and Palestine. I don't think it makes sense to slander Rachel, because Rachel was a very loving person, a humanist who really cared about people's well-being, I think, on both sides of the line.
Yeah, I didn't know Rachel personally, but she's a big inspiration in my life. Every time I hear about her story or think about her, it really hits me. I mean, it hits me at my. It's just such like a powerful story. She was, I work on Latin American solidarity issues, and it's about being like an internationalist. And I think thinking like that is pretty powerful. And part of the reason why I work on solidarity issues with Latin America really has a lot to do with Rachel Corrie and the inspiration I found there with what she was doing. So, it's pretty powerful. Like, and all the things get skewed. People have like the person who like drove the Caterpillar pre-assembled Caterpillar bulldozer tank, which is made and armored in the United States. It's sold. It's not a Caterpillar. That was interesting, That's not, it's not like a bulldozer that's like that Israel converts. It's a fully armed,
weaponized
bulldozer. It's really incredible.
I thought that the weaponization occurred in Israel, but I may be wrong about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it. I mean, the guy who was talking said it was weaponized in the United States.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Weaponized by the company, at least.
Okay, at least the company that does the weaponization is from the United States. I wouldn't be surprised about that.
No, that it's actually is Caterpillar.
Okay,
but I mean, there's details or whatever.
And,
it's just,
and Caterpillar is, suspect, in my opinion, for selling equipment that is used in that way, clearly. Uh-huh. I mean, and all the people who are shareholders in the Caterpillar Corporation who are reaping dividends and other sorts of profit from that company, which is engaged in such a horrible, act. I mean, gosh, I guess, it makes me wonder about Zionism and all that. I mean, we could get probably into a lengthy philosophical conversation about that. And, what is Zionism? Where did it begin? What does it represent? And, I don't know. I mean, I'm very sympathetic with the people relating to the persecution that Jews experienced in Europe. I'm not opposed to the idea of a Jewish state necessarily. I think Judaism is a wonderful religion in a lot of ways, but, to have this like violent Zionism really doesn't make sense. I don't think it serves Jews anywhere in the world. If anything, it's like, making people angry at Jewish people, and I don't think that's good.
Yeah, it's just basic fundamentalism in general is really bad for any religion. And Judaism is no different. They're really, the U.S. is on their side, on the side of Israel on everything that they're doing in Palestine, and supports Israel completely. And that's like being, if it were, it's on being on the side of like the extreme right wing of the of Judaism.
Judeo-Christianity.
If the United States were on the side of the extreme Islamic fundamentalists, it'd be no different. And you know, and Islamic fundamentalists see it like that. You know, they see, wow, U.S. is back, just backs the Israeli government, who they see as just extreme wackos.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, I mean, it just provokes the right wing of extremist Islamic fundamentalism.
It's a very complicated issue, and I don't know all the details. My understanding is that Zionism is pretty old. It goes back to the 1800s, and that for most of the early part of Zionism, it actually wasn't violent. It was very high-minded, and there were communities that were set up that were very peaceful and pretty much just agrarian, and kind of these communes that were cooperative. And it wasn't until the mid-40s, during World War II, when the Jews were persecuted in Europe and Britain became involved and the United States became involved in establishing the State of Israel, that there were all of a sudden these more violent developments in the Zionism movement. So, I can't speak as an authority on this, but that's my understanding, rudimentary at this point.
Yeah, I don't. I'm scared of them. I don't want to, like, you know, criticize Zionism too much. I'll admit it. You know, I just don't want to get on the super blacklist of being someone who is viewed as anti-Semitic, because I'm far from being that.
That's a scary thing to be labeled as being anti-Semitic, but.
When you criticize Israel, though, you run that risk.
Yeah,
and so, you know, it's a hard line to balance between, and that label is a label that can lead to harsh penalties.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's also fair to separate the actions of Israel as a state from, you know, Judaism, and say, it's not right for anybody of any religion to oppress, to, you know, basically target and be cruel toward another group of people. So, I mean, what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians is very cruel. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of myth, a lot of false mythology out there about what the history is. Some extreme Zionists go as far to say that there were no people, there were no inhabitants before Israel, and Palestinians moved in after Israel was founded, and that's just not true. Palestinians are native inhabitants of the area who have been there for hundreds and thousands of years, and, you know, that's just, I don't think that's really arguable.
I don't think so either. It's complex, though. I don't want to dig in too much.
That's okay.
Into it, personally. Yeah. It's just a very difficult situation. And I'm really hopeful that, like, that they're, as you are, mm-hmm. The Palestinians are given a little more breathing room, or a lot more, given full rights as people, and are no longer oppressed.
Well,
I also hope that, like, nothing bad befalls the people of Israel who are Jewish, or people of Israel who are Islamic or Christian as well, because there's mm-hmm. lots of different religions there.
Well, I'm very much happy to live in Olympia and celebrate the memory of Rachel Corrie and all of the wonderful work that she did in her life. And I'm looking forward to reading this article in Works in Progress about Rachel and the case that is going on in Israel right now. And one thing that I'd like to add that I'm always interested in terms of the subject of Israel is how certain factions of Christianity in the United States specifically are very supportive of the Israeli settlement movement. And a lot of Israeli settlements are subsidized by right-wing Christian groups in the United States. And one of the ideas that I've heard is that these right-wing Christian groups are interested in promoting or provoking the rapture. And so, you know, that's a very disturbing idea, that there would be people who are interested in provoking violence, provoking, you know, supporting the antagonism of the Israeli state in order to, what, you know, hopefully stimulate the return of Christ, so they believe. I mean, I don't understand how people can
believe in it.
I don't understand how people could call themselves Christians, you know, and how it's just it boggles my mind. That's all. It boggles my mind. Quite simply.
Well, just like, I don't know, just who believes in the rapture? I mean, like, there's a lot of like doomsday scenarios. I know. There's lots of doomsday scenarios out there. You know, there's huge amounts of people who don't believe in the rapture, but believe in like this and that doomsday scenario. Mm-hmm. And I fall into that trap sometimes. You know, like 2012 or whatever. I'm not saying I'm a believer in it, but whatever. But you know, almost every, there's been so many generations, especially the last like 50 years, of people who are like, the end is near. When, you know, if you're a believer in global warming, for example, the end isn't necessarily near. I mean, like, we're not, I mean, it's just going to be worse and worse for a long time, especially in the next 100 years. It's got, you know, but it's not like there's going to be, like seven horsemen, you know, riding down from wherever the hell they come from.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah. I think the idea that there will be a savior that comes to fix the world is dangerous, to the point where insofar as, I mean, I think it's a wonderful idea, and I hope that, you know, there are many saviors that come to save the world, because I don't think just one could do it at this point. But, you know, I think it's dangerous because it says that people just say, oh, you know, I don't need to do anything. I don't need to stand up for my rights or for the rights of anyone else, because I'm just waiting for God to come and take care of all the problems. And I think that, you know, if we want to fix the world, that it's going to require a lot of people working and a lot of people dedicating their lives to cultural change. So,
yeah, I guess I mean, that's the magic that I don't like, you know. Not that I'm against I don't know. I guess it's just like, I think it's possible that like a long time ago people were like, whoa, look at these trends here. Maybe there were some like really bright people that are like, math was around back then. People had a lot of time on their hands. There were some genius people from the time of Jesus or what have you. And maybe they calculate, they're like, well, if we continue like this, civilization, 2,000 years will be at a tipping point for the whole world. I don't know. I mean, that's, to me, that's like more realistic than like it came to me in a dream. Although, I mean, it's one way of thinking. But it's from God or whatever. But I guess like I'm really interested in the Hopi legend of the rainbow warriors coming from all the different tribes of the earth and coming together and restoring balance to the world. I think that's a really beautiful legend, or what would you call it? It's not a legend. It's a
myth, idea, story.
I don't know.
Yeah. Prophecy.
Prophecy. Yeah, that was a prophecy.
Yeah, there's a lot of prophecies.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, if Christians are working to, if some Christians are working to fulfill the prophecy of the rapture, well, maybe we should all be working to fulfill the prophecy of the Hopi legend of the Rainbow Warriors. You know,
bringers of peace, de-escalation.
I don't know if it's de-escalation, but
love is the answer. I like the sticker that you have there. It says, "War is a racket." And that's the title of a famous speech and book by U.S. Marine, what is it? USMC, U.S. Marine, what's that stand for?
Major General Smedley Butler.
USMC Major General Smedley Butler, Smedley D. Butler, 1935 in the mid-30s, was famous for giving a speech and calling war a racket, saying it's possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, and surely the most vicious of rackets that exist in our system of living.
Well, he's picked by like a group of business leaders to basically take over the United States in a military coup.
Very interesting story. We could talk about that. I mean, that would probably be a good run into talking about Travis Bishop, who is a conscientious objector who objects to the war in Afghanistan. I just got back from Coffee Strong, where there was a celebration for Travis Bishop, who was recently released from the brig at Fort Lewis, if you prefer to use the new terminology, Joint Base Lewis-McChord. McChord Lewis, whatever it is. And that was a wonderful celebration. There was a good turnout. There was food there. One of Bishop's attorneys was there, James Branham, who really said some wonderful words. He said some words that were really wonderful about Travis and about the effort that they're going to do in terms of making it acceptable for soldiers who are enlisted in the military, any military service personnel, to object conscientiously to what they're told to do after they're enlisted. It's okay. If you're enlisted in the military, it's okay to conscientiously object, to have and the words that he used are wonderful, and I'm hoping to get a piece of audio from the speech, because he said the term that he used is, if your conscience will not give you peace, if you're not able to have peace, then that's what qualifies an individual for conscientious objector status. So if you're in the military and your conscience will not give you peace when you're asked to perform some of the duties or told to perform some of the duties that go along with being in the military and doing that work, then you qualify for a conscientious objector status, and you definitely don't deserve to be held in confinement in the brig for 7 months. So if you're in the military and you qualify under those conditions, then you know, go talk to the people at Coffee Strong, please, because there is support for you there and a lot of people who agree with you. So,
well, yeah, you know, the conscientious objector, the problem is, though, is of course that, like, at this point in time, almost everybody would be a conscientious objector who's in the military right now, because you talk to soldiers, it's overwhelmingly they don't support this war. They don't support either war that's happening in the Middle East right now, and most of them are there for economic reasons or for problems they've had with the law. There's a lot who are in the army because they were told you can go to jail or you can join the army.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they started handing out, if they made it easy, I'm not saying that they
shouldn't. That sounds like indentured servitude.
But if they started handing out conscientious ejector things more easily, they would very quickly have their rank's completely gone. So I don't see that happening.
Well, I just want to check in here and make sure that we're done with Rachel Corrie, talking about Rachel Corrie. I do have a short 56-second speech that Rachel did in fifth grade. Do you think we should play that? Or, I mean, do you think that I would
sure.
like to play it?
Let's go for it.
Okay, let's play this thing. Here, it's going to take a couple seconds maybe to download. Here it is.
I'm here for other children. I'm here because I care. I'm here because children everywhere are suffering and because 40,000 people die each day from hunger. I'm here because those people are mostly children. We have got to understand that the poor are all around us and we're ignoring them. We have got to understand that these deaths are preventable. We have got to understand that people in third world countries think and care and smile and cry just like us. We have got to understand that they are us. We are them. My dream is to stop hunger by the year 2000. My dream is to give the poor a chance. My dream is to save the 40,000 people who die each day. My dream can and will come true if we all look into the future and see the light that shines there.
Wow. So that was Rachel Corrie. And well, we're going to move along now. It sounds like we're going to talk a little bit about the meditation center, the 10-day retreat of silence that Bird, did, Vipassana. I got it right for once. And then we also want to talk a little bit about this Latin American Solidarity Conference coming to town. And, what was the last thing we were going to talk about?
Healthcare.
Boom.
And yeah. I also want to touch on diversity, just maybe a little bit briefly.
Okay.
Well, I did do this Vipassana meditation, 10-day meditation. I got back exactly 2 weeks ago today, and
what was it all about?
It was really intense. Vipassana is a meditation technique. It's known as insight meditation. So it's basically about focusing attention and awareness inward, and it's an introspective thing, basically developing awareness about so I went there and I learned this technique, and I learned how to develop awareness about my own body, and the idea is to develop awareness of physical sensations on the body in order to be more present in daily life. And so the idea is to remain relaxed and equanimous while being present in the body and aware of all the physical sensations that occur, you know, throughout the day, throughout life. Anyway, very intense experience, and I'm really glad I did it. I would recommend it to anyone who is interested in a challenging spiritual adventure, because it was definitely challenging both. It was challenging in all ways, physically, emotionally, mentally.
And this is like a not. This is it's really not religious, right? It's a meditative practice, right? And that's what I read on their website the other day.
It can be interpreted in a variety of ways. The program says that it is universal. It's not it is non-religious, but it is Buddhist. There's no question about that. The technique is a Buddhist technique, and a lot of the teachings involve terms that are Buddhist and ideas that are very, very established Buddhist traditions. So, there are some maybe, I don't know, some aspects of the course that were a little contradictory, but I think it was worthwhile and a very powerful experience. And if you're in a place where you're looking for a spiritual adventure, that's what I like to call it. it's good.
Did you and screw it, up at all? I just want to know. Did you like talk?
Was did that I break really the
hard?
Rules?
Yeah. Well, was it hard not to talk? I've never.
It was hard to talk. Hard not to talk. Very hard. And, you know, it felt weird. And I wasn't only not supposed to talk with my fellow students. I was not supposed to acknowledge them in any way. So I wasn't, we weren't allowed to make eye contact, have any physical contact. And so it was kind of weird because we were all, you know, eating at the same time and meditating in the same place. And I had a roommate and we weren't allowed to exchange glances or eye contact or, you know, communicate using gestures. So there was no communication. So it was kind of like, do I hold the door for this person and acknowledge that they exist? Or, you know, and in the beginning, I kind of didn't. But then as time went on, I could tell, you know, it's kind of polite to hold the door for people, even if it's kind of maybe not strict following the rules. And I tended to, the rules were good. And, you know, at the headline of the rules, it said, you must stay for the whole 10-day course. And then it said, other rules should be considered as well. And so I took that word considered very literally and adopted a somewhat liberal approach to the rules and decided that it would be best to take care of myself and rest when I needed to rest rather than do the full 10 hours of sitting that the course outlined for each day. And it was really, it was a great experience. I feel like I learned a lot about myself and a lot about the world. It was a beautiful sight. There's a lot of nature, a lot of wonderful sunrises and sunsets and wildlife. And there's a view of Mount Rainier from there. And I was able to talk with the assistant teacher who was there. So I was able to go in and ask questions, and I was able to talk with the staff person who was there watching over us. And ask basic questions about the center, about the course, and, you know, and so, you know, I could make eye contact with this person and have short, you know, question answer sort of, you know, things. And so it's, you know, don't go in there and get like, the main thing is if you sign up to really commit to doing the whole 10 days, because the day 10 really wraps it up and there's some important stuff that happens at that point. So,
right on.
But it is, you know, my experience varied from excruciating to just bliss. And I had those experiences throughout pretty much the whole 10 days.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that. You want to talk about, should we move on to, I don't want to dig too much into healthcare. So let's save that to the end.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just have probably like, you know, a few sentences worth of ideas
about healthcare.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure. Just a few.
Yeah. It's an interesting subject.
Yeah.
And relevant. Oh, the other thing I wanted to add to what's going on in Israel is that the Obama administration, there's recently some stuff going on, and Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, was recently visiting the United States in Washington, D.C., and meeting with a lot of the top-level politicians. I think he had dinner with the vice president, and there were some high-level meetings that occurred, and Israel is doing some very controversial stuff right now in terms of settlements in the East Bank. And also there's been an invasion in Gaza that has been very underreported in the media, and that's something that I haven't been following nearly as closely as I would like, but I would encourage everybody to learn up about that, what's going on in Israel right now, settlements in the East Bank of Jerusalem, and recent invasion in Gaza. A couple Israeli soldiers were actually killed in the invasion recently, and I don't know how many Palestinians were killed. That was not mentioned in the mainstream news report that I saw in the headline. But so I wanted to mention that. But the what I wanted to say was that the high-level American politicians, Hillary Clinton, General Petraeus, I believe, and Biden and President Obama all spoke disfavorably toward Israel's settlement activity in East Jerusalem. And so that, I think that's interesting. And that's all been going on at the same time that this trial has been going on in the Israeli Supreme Court in Tel Aviv with Rachel Corrie's parents, Craig and Cindy Corrie. So, and the trial has received little to no attention in the mainstream media that I have noticed thus far.
Yeah, no, it hasn't gotten any. There was like one, you know, the truth is that the United States could end this Israeli-Palestinian situation at any moment in time. Mm-hmm. And they don't. So I don't give this administration a lick of credit for like their like slight words of like, because it's just words. They've talked about it. You know, you can read it everywhere. That they're not backed by any threat of like suspending some of the huge amounts of aid we give them or whatever other favors we mm-hmm. give Israel. So I don't know.
Well, I think we should move on. Maybe I could just say a couple things about the presentation on Afghanistan by Dana Vasali, and then we could talk about Lasso.
Cool.
Well, Dana was here last Thursday and did a very informative 2-hour presentation at the Olympia Library and talked about traveling to Afghanistan earlier this month. Dana was there between about March 1st and March 15th.
You should get Dana to come on the radio show.
Yeah, Dana lives in Northern Washington State. Dana is an environmentalist, a botanist by trade, and is very interested in war and its effect on the environment, its effect on humanity. And so it was a really great presentation with some wonderful photography that Dana did while he was there and other photography that Dana has collected through the years relating to Afghanistan. And so it was very interesting. There were some, some news, some troubling aspects, you know, in terms of the stability of Afghanistan. And one of the, I'm kind of reluctant to share this information because I think it deserves a lot of discussion. And so I don't want to say this is the end all be all. But one of the ideas that Dana included or facts was that he was asking people while he was there a question, and he sort of did it in a scientific way. He asked people what they think and feel about the presence of the American soldiers there. And people's response was pretty consistent that they did not like the presence of the American soldiers, but they also didn't want the Americans to leave because they were worried about civil, you know, quote unquote civil war.
Yeah, that's what they said.
That's certainly not unanimous amongst all Afghanis and people of Afghanistan, and so I hesitate to share that information, but you know, that's interesting to think about. And it kind of made me think about the PMR movement, the Port Militarization Resistance movement, and you know, I'm certainly still supportive of the PMR movement, but it also made me think that there needs to be more effort on attacking, on drawing attention to and creating awareness about the problem of war profiting. And that, you know, back to the old Smedley Butler stuff, we need legislation that effectively bars people from, that prohibits people from profiting from war, from any war-related industry. So,
you know what I saw the other day? I'm just going to butt in here. I was at, in Seattle yesterday, I went to the Canterbury, which is like an old bar up on 15th Street I used to go to in the Capitol Hill area. I used to live near there. And at the Canterbury was a new arcade game. It, you know, there was an old arcade game there that was, I don't know, it was one of those arcade games where you shoot terrorists, you know, which was awful. They were all like Islamic looking people, and they were all terrorists, and we're supposed to stop the terrorists by killing them all. And that was the old game. I mean, I'm sure people have seen that around. Well, that game was gone, and in its place was America's Army. And I don't know if people have seen this game around. America's Army is a game, an arcade game, that was made by the Pentagon. It's like all over the place, you know, and like it's like having a recruiter hanging out at every bar that you go to, because like you play the game, it's all like patriotic and stuff, and maybe you do really good at the end of it. They have, or throughout it actually, they have advertisements to join the army, you know, and the whole thing is meant to give this really misconstrued like reality of how the army really is.
And you have to pay to play this game?
Yeah, I'm really interested in learning more about it. This is the first time I saw it. I've heard about the army developing video games and stuff, but yeah, you would pay to play it. But I wonder if the bar gets the machine for free. It wouldn't be surprising to me.
Yeah, that wouldn't be surprising, but you never know in this world.
Yep.
Well, hey, we should play that War is a Racket speech sometime, maybe on an upcoming show, kind of time constraint maybe on this. We might be pushing it because we should talk about Lasso.
Yeah, okay. Well, there is a Latin American Solidarity Conference, a Northwest Regional Latin American
Very exciting.
It's coming up in the... not this next weekend, but the weekend after that. So in 2 weeks. And it's going to be on April 9th through the 11th. And it's finishing up with Father Roy Bourgeois of School of the Americas Watch, who's going to be speaking at 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Have you seen Father Bourgeois speak?
Yes, I have.
I have too. He's wonderful.
Yeah, he's a real peaceful guy. But, you know, he stands up. He always stands up for the right thing.
He has an amazing story.
It's like bravery, you know?
Yeah. I saw him speak at Traditions a couple years ago, and he told the story of when he broke, or not broke in, but he infiltrated Fort Benning with three other friends. And they went, this was at a time when the El Salvadorian military had a bunch of soldiers visiting Fort Benning, being trained by the School of Americas there. The project formerly School of Americas, now it's known as WINSEC. And so... they infiltrated the base. They went and got some surplus stuff, and Father Roy knew how to get by because I believe he was in the military for some time, and so he knew how to cop the attitude. And he went in there, and they went near where the barracks where these soldiers from El Salvador were sleeping, and at about 11 p.m., right as they turned the lights out, or at sometime 9 p.m., whenever they turned the lights out, they brought a high-powered stereo boombox type, you know, PA system, and they put on a speech by Archbishop Oscar Romero that urged very, very forcefully urged the soldiers to stop killing. And they were up in a tree. They had climbed a tree, and they had interestingly included the detail that they brought pepper with them and dropped pepper along their trail and around the trees that they had climbed. So the military dogs that were searching for them were unable to find them for quite some time while the stereo raged on playing this speech, and they were unable to get them out of the tree. Finally, they did get them out of the tree, and... Father Bourgeois was beaten by the military people and then imprisoned for 18 months for his courageous act.
Yeah, anyway, you're giving it all away.
I know. So come see Father Roy Bourgeois.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a good time. There's going to be also workshops all day on Saturday, and people should check out the conference.
I like to share information and knowledge.
That's why I have a radio show. Yep, and I think he's an exciting guy. He acts, so that's really great. Oscar Romero was killed last Wednesday in 1981.
It's been 29 years last Wednesday.
I think it's been 29 years last Wednesday. And that's a guy that we need to
remember.
Keep in mind. Yeah, to remember. Actually, I believe also that that Cesar Chavez is died tomorrow. And Cesar Chavez was a tireless advocate for farm workers, especially Latino farm workers. And so we should
remember Cesar Chavez.
Yeah. They're trying to make his day a national holiday like Martin Luther King Day.
Cesar Chavez Presente. Archbishop Oscar Romero Presente.
So, yeah.
So tell me more about the LASSO conference at Evergreen in 2 weeks from now, April 9th through 11th. You told me a little bit. Maybe I'll try to recite some of what I know, and you can correct me if I'm in error in any way.
Well, we have...
There's like a bunch of people who have signed up to go, and you have workshops planned. Mm-hmm. People are going to be giving workshops, and it sounds wonderful. When does it start on Friday the 9th?
Well, Jesse Freestein of the Real News Network is coming to speak about his coverage of the Honduran coup. And that's going to be at 7 p.m. on Friday, April 9th. And at that point in time, if people come out to that, they can find out where all the different locations for the program and what the workshops are all going to be about. It's mostly, there's going to be a lot of like local activists from the Northwest region who are showing up, who do solidarity work. And I'm really excited because one, it's a good chance to work on a broad range of activist issues. So I think it'll be a good time. We've got a lot on our plate for that weekend, and so people should totally come out. It's the Northwest Latin American Solidarity Conference, and you can find information at www.nwlasconference.wordpress.com. And what else is on our list of things to talk about today?
Well, I did want to talk about the Bohemian Grove, but I'm thinking maybe we should wait until next week. You know, it's been a pretty action-packed show. And so I think, you know, that deserves maybe a larger amount of time. But, you know, look forward to more news and discussion and opinionation about opining about the Bohemian Grove and what that's all about in future shows. What else? Oh, I was interested in talking about we wanted to touch on the healthcare bill, and I also want to talk about diversity and the fact that there are many kinds of diversity, and I think that people should be open-minded about diversity and not limit the concept of diversity to things like age, gender, race, religion, ethnicity, but to also include aspects like socioeconomic status, things like philosophical beliefs and, you know, when we're considering how we're represented by government, I think it makes sense to have people from all different socioeconomic strata represented in our government, especially including people who are unemployed, underemployed, people who are homeless. You know, one of the ideas that I like would be to have a spot on a city council that would be reserved for someone who is homeless or living in poverty. So I don't know. That's just a thought that I've had in terms of diversity and representation. And you know, I think everybody's experience is valid in life, and that I think what happens is that some people like discount other people's experience based on certain aspects of their life, like how much money they have or what kind of business ambition that they have. And I don't think that's good. I mean, I think we should have people, you know, I think people should be respected, and everybody's experience is valid and should be respected regardless of their socioeconomic or professional status. So that's my thoughts about diversity. And sort of, you know, some of my thoughts about diversity at this point. Obviously, I'm a dynamic being who has constantly changing ideas about the world. So I'm blathering in a monotone voice now.
Well, yeah.
And I just, yeah, I'm really just wonderfully happy to be alive. And so don't let my voice make you think otherwise. Hey, that sounds nice. What are we listening to?
Yeah, the war.
Some Leonard Cohen.
It will be fun again.
Leonard.
The holy dove.
I just thought it would be a good idea to play a little Cohen
for
people.
We could talk about healthcare while we're listening to Lenny.
Yeah, I think we're actually going to be checking out here.
Are we checking out? Should we do a station idea?
Yeah, let's do a station idea.
You want to do a tandem? Like, you do the first part and I'll do the second part? Or?
Okay, you're listening to KOWA, low power, 106.5 FM.
Olympia, Washington, broadcasting to the world.
You can call us up at 360-352-1646.
Good evening, good morning, and good night. And don't call us if it's not March 28th.
Ciao.
Peace.
We asked for signs. The signs were sent. The birth betrayed. The marriage spent. Yeah, the widowhood of every government. Signs for all to see. I can't run no more with that lawless crowd. While the killers in high places say their prayers out loud. But they've summoned up a thundercloud. They're gonna hear from me. Ring the bell that still could ring. That's how the light gets in.
can strike up the march. There is no drum. Every heart to love will be.